When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome back to the Red Sea Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and joining me for episode 230 of the show is my co-host, Keaton DeRosier of Over the Monster and the Dynasty Guru. Keaton, what's going on, my friend?
Not much, just enjoying some low-sugar gummy butterflies, prepping to talk about the defense on this pod, and sure, it's not going to be a pleasant conversation, but I'm ready.
Yeah, so that's the title or the topic for today's podcast. We're going to be talking all about the Red Sox defense, because over the last few months, and especially over the last couple of weeks, we've seen some pretty sloppy defensive play. And, it's not necessarily like... It's not necessarily the only hallmark of the times when the Red Sox play bad, but I think that it's one of the things that is most noticeable when this team does play poorly. And we got a bunch of listener questions about it as well. Just like looking down at our listener questions before we even get started with the podcast. And, you know, we don't look at these questions before we make the agenda. So this kind of just tracks with what we're seeing, though. But we got a question from Mark Anderson. What can be done about the defense? We got a question from Justin Wolf. Ideal lineup going forward. Has Verdugo as the fourth outfielder. Talk me out of it. Schwarber in left. Bobby at first. JD at DH. Lots of different things just focusing on the defense because it's been so bad lately. So what we are going to do is we are going to deep dive into each position on the team defensively. I've looked at two metrics here that I've gotten stats on. Outs above average, which uses StatCast data to determine how good a defensive player and team is. And then we also used FanGraphs DEF, which measures a whole bunch of stuff, But, you know, among the things that that measures, it takes into account UZR, the arm, errors, you know, all sorts of defensive runs saved, all sorts of stuff. And it kind of combines it into an all-encompassing defensive statistic that also takes into account the position that the player is playing. So, you know, definitely we're going to be looking at both of those things, and sometimes they tell different tales. So we'll be looking into that. But first, Keaton, before we get into the deep dive on the defense, I wanted to just hit on the roster, because some of the roster changes lately have been pretty interesting. Particularly, Jose Iglesias is back with the Red Sox. That's pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah, not one that I would have thought, but obviously, given all the folks out for COVID and lack of middle infielders, seems like a nice fit to slip right back in there. Obviously, big help on the defensive side, not so much on the offensive side, but we'll see if as guys come back, he stays.
Yeah, and I didn't think I'd see so much Taylor Motter, a person I didn't even know existed before last week. That was kind of shocking.
Yeah, but, there's, you know, dire times.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, Motter designated for assignment. We got a fun question about him as well. Cordero was just optioned. Kike has made his way back to the lineup. Danny Santana has as well. So the lineup is starting to normalize a little bit more. Getting Kike back definitely helps that situation. Renfro back from the bereavement list. Last time we spoke, you know, he had been gone. So Iglesias is at shortstop filling in for Xander Bogaerts. You know, bench looks pretty normal at this point. Plawecki, Shaw, Arauz, Danny Santana. But it's really on the pitching side of things that COVID is still, you know, racking with issues here. Xander and Arroyo and Jaron Duran are the defensive guys that are still on the IL. But Matt Barnes, Martin Perez, Hirokazu Sawamura, and Nick Pivetta are the guys who are, you know, still hitting up the COVID list. Any thoughts on the roster here? You know, as we're kind of looking towards hopefully getting some of these guys back soon.
Yeah, only that the last two save opportunities have gone to Garrett Whitlock as the revolving door at closer continues. Do you think they'll find stability? Of course, I say that as he just blew a save the other day. With that role, or do you think when Barnes comes back, it's he's going to get the shot again?
I think when Barnes comes back, he gets the shot again, because I think they like Whitlock and Ottavino to kind of float and be available in all sorts of different situations. And I think the bullpen functions best with a good Matt Barnes at the end of it. So I hope that Barnes finds his way back into that role and in a way that, you know, actually works.
So you believe with the time off that it'll be enough time for him to kind of clear his head and come back at it?
Yeah, I don't think he's as bad as he showed. I hope he's not as bad as
yeah,
he showed.
I was going to say, because it was pretty bad.
Yeah, we have a lot more evidence of Matt Barnes being an effective pitcher than we do of him being that bad. Like, even when Barnes has been bad in the past, he's not been that bad, so... I got to think that there are better times to come, but hopefully, you know, that can kick into gear here soon with, you know, one more game against Tampa Bay Rays as you're listening to this on Wednesday, off day Thursday, and then at Chicago White Sox, at Seattle. Those are both tough series coming up, and Red Sox really are in that type of position where they need to win a lot of games down the stretch.
Yeah. Can't be giving them away.
No. But, you know, I have been impressed that the Red Sox have been able to claw their way back into, I guess we can call it contention. I mean, they're certainly not contending for the division at this point, nine games back, but only a half game back of the Yankees, who has that first wild card spot, and, you know, still a handful of games clear of you know, teams like Seattle and the Blue Jays and Oakland. So, you know, despite one of the uglier months of baseball in August, I mean, the team is still kind of right there.
Yeah, after that hot streak that the Yankees went on, now they've lost like five in a row, something like that.
Yeah.
So that'll get you back into it.
Yeah.
Now you just need to take advantage. They've been half a game back for two games that haven't gone their way and probably should have.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, so let's get right into it, Keaton. Let's go down to the defensive side of things. Catcher, let's start there. Behind the plate, Christian Vasquez and Kevin Plawecki have been doing the vast majority of the catching this year. Christian Vasquez was just named the best defensive catcher in baseball by Baseball America, which I guess polled a bunch of executives. But the stats don't really bear that out. He's been worth this year 5.3 DEF by Fangraphs, which is good for 16th out of 20 catchers with at least 600 innings behind the plate. And that's a huge dip off from where he was. He was in the teens in that rating and even as high as 20 DEF between 2017 and 2019. So he does appear to be going downhill. My question for you, Keaton, is have you noticed a slip in his defense over this year?
No, but I have noticed a slip elsewhere. Like, just, and it kind of plays into a larger theme. So you hit off the top that when things are going poorly for the Red Sox, it's not just the defense; it's other things. It kind of feels like just mental mistakes in general, with base running errors, forgetting outs, poor defense, just god awful approaches at the plate, trying to force things with runners in scoring position. All of those things are kind of just like wrapped up into just mental mistakes. And there's been a few that have stuck out from Vasquez, like forgetting outs and poor base running. That are things that just can't happen for a guy who's just been around the game as long as him. However, he is 31, just turned 31 a little bit ago. And this is kind of generally the point where everyday catchers start declining if they haven't already. So I don't think it's, you know, out of character for where he's at in his career, but I haven't really like noticed it watching the games. He still seems like he's on the sharper side of the defensive metrics than these kind of yield out. But I think he was probably like top five, top three defensively in that 2017, 2019 range. So I guess I wouldn't necessarily expect him to be there now, but there's still a lot worse options that you could go with there over Vasquez. So I'm happy with what generally overall what he's given us this year.
Yeah, I think it's fine as long as he's hitting, but the thing is that he hasn't really been hitting this year, which has made it harder to swallow. And if you look at the stats, I mean, he has gone downhill this year versus other years in terms of just the rate of you know, his defensive run saved, and even his arm is ticked down a little bit. I have noticed it in plays at the plate, you know, his ability to control the running game and tag runners and things like that, I think has gotten a little bit worse. I haven't noticed anything in terms of like how he's calling the games or anything like that. I think he still does a good job handling the staff, but I think it brings up an interesting question. If you have a catcher who is 31, who is declining defensively, and, you know, defense is supposed to be his hallmark, do you pick up that $7 million option in 2022?
I think it depends on how confident you feel in Connor Wong, right?
Yeah. Well, how confident do you feel in Connor Wong?
I feel confident enough.
Would you pick up the option if it was you?
Ooh, in a vacuum. You know, prior to this season, I would have said in a heartbeat.
Yep.
But there are just such clear signs of decline now. And Connor Wong has looked fine in the stints that he's gotten this year. I think another thing that went into that is they never really had another option for a while.
Right.
And now they have Wong, who's a viable option and major league ready. I don't think I do.
Yeah. I don't think I do either, because I think there are enough veteran options that you can find on the market. One of the guys that I like who's going to be available is a guy in Yan Gomes, who is making roughly a little bit more than half, I guess, what Christian would make next year. He's making $4 million this year. He's going to be a free agent. There are a few other guys like that that I think, you know, can handle a staff pretty well. Obviously, you have to form that rapport with the pitchers who are going to be there, but I'm not super worried about that. I think you can get somebody who approximates his value for less than $7 million. And maybe what that ends up being is Christian Vasquez for less than $7 million. Maybe you decline the option and then, you know, renegotiate with him at a lower rate.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, too, about the plays at the plate. Because now that you mention it, that is something that I wanted to talk about. Why does he always try and tag the runner at the waist instead of, like, in front of the plate on their foot or hand or whatever's coming in first?
Yeah. I don't know. Nuts. Yeah, it has been one of the things that he's been doing that has been very annoying. And, you know, it's showed up because those runs have scored. So, yeah, definitely been noticeable. And this was a position, I think, that going into this year, Keaton, we both felt pretty rock solid about. You know, we were talking about Christian Vasquez as a top 10 option at catcher, maybe even a top 5 option at catcher at certain times. And it seems like the way that the ball has been playing this year, with a little bit less juice to it, has certainly affected his game more than some others on this roster.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, let's look over at first base. This is where things get ugly. This has been one of the worst positions in all of baseball for the Red Sox, you know, in particular first base. It's just been very ugly in terms of the WAR produced there. We know the struggles of Bobby Dalbec this season. Kyle Schwarber has just really started to play there very recently, and he hasn't gotten a ton of starts there. Dalbec has been worth -8 outs above average, which is last place out of 37 qualified first basemen. And I wanted to see where that would rank if we expanded it to just 50 attempts, defensive attempts. And if we do that, he's 48th out of 48. So still not very good. So I guess my first question for you, Keaton, is since we've seen Bobby Dalbec improve his play at first base with the bat, at least, is it worth continuing to run him out at first base every day, despite the fact that he's been god awful at the position defensively?
Yeah, I think you do, because the bat is that hot. Guess that means, well, yeah, that's tough. I guess that would mean Schwarber in the outfield, JD at DH.
Yep.
And so you're pulling off platooning Renfro and Verdugo.
Which I kind of hate.
Yeah, I don't really like that either. Man. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this, and I don't really buy into this mini breakout from Bobby Dalbec. I think it's cool that he's hot right now. I think we've seen this from him in the minor leagues, where he gets these torrid stretches and then he's sort of back to the player that he was. So I'm not sure that I'm, you know, taking this as the Bobby Dalbec breakout. It's nice to see, but for me, if you already have Bobby Dalbec playing terrible defense at first base, I'd rather Kyle Schwarber's bat play terrible defense at first base than Dalbec's, because I think that that's the neatest fit for the team. You know, if you have Schwarber at first, that allows you to play JD Martinez at DH. And as we're going to get to later, JD is hitting extremely well as the DH. He's batting .304. 366, 573 with a 147 WRC plus at DH. Spoiler alert, he is not doing that when he's playing left field. So I really like the idea of Schwarber at first, JD in the DH spot. You know, and just to kind of drive home the point with Bobby Dalbec, it's not just outs above average that hates him. Fangraphs metrics, DEF, has him as negative 10.2, 20th out of 25, minimum 600 innings at the position. So I think Bobby Dalbec ends up a bench piece for me.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that.
It's kind of weird to say for a guy who's, you know, just won what? It was like, what did he win? Rookie of the month or something like that? Rookie of the week? Was it week or month? I can't remember.
I didn't even see that he had won anything, so.
Yeah, I think it was month, but I think it was for August, but I don't know.
Well, it was a really good August. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it was a good August. So getting back to his breakout, though, Keaton, I mean, are you buying this as a true, you know, Dalbec's changed something in his swing, or are you thinking that this is just a hot streak as well?
Yeah, I think it's just a hot streak. I mean, I think he's better than what he produced over the first half, the 219 average, but I don't think he's significantly better like he's been. I think, like, 240 to 250 seems reasonable enough with a bunch of homers.
Mm-hmm.
But Schwarber's going to be far better than that, and he's going to get on base significantly more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's the play.
Okay. All right, moving on to second base. This was a really interesting position to look at defensively. So for the majority of the year, it's been Kike Hernandez and Christian Arroyo. But Arroyo has been kind of off injured or off ill or, you know, all sorts of different reasons why he's not been able to be in the lineup. But when he has been in the lineup, his defense has been much better than Kike's at second base. The metrics say Arroyo has been worth plus one outs above average. Kike, on the other side, has been worth negative four outs above average. And in looking at DEF, Arroyo has been worth 3.0 DEF versus Kike 0.1. So Kike kind of average there. But the big thing that throws a wrench into this whole, yeah, just play Arroyo there, is Kike is hitting like an MVP when he plays second base. So he's slashing 342. 438, 624 with a 183 WRC plus over 178 plate appearances at second base. That's basically hitting like Juan Soto at second base. And when Kike is in center field, he's hitting 220, 300, 396 with an 87 WRC plus. He's basically Jackie Bradley Jr. with the bat when he's in center field. What the hell do you do in this situation?
Baseball's a hell of a sport, man.
Yeah.
I think you got to move him to center field, though, because their defense collectively is so bad that you got to take the wins where you can and just hope that the bat catches up to where it is in other positions. and the clear option is Arroyo at second,
right,
and Kike in center. And that's significantly better defensively. And I think center field is far more important than second defensively, I think.
Yep.
At least for this Red Sox team, because center field is large and weird. And as we saw with Verdugo over the weekend, if you take the slightest of incorrect routes, you get absolutely torched.
Right.
And you gotta have the best fundamental defense you possibly can in center field.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that play from Verdugo that you just mentioned. You know, he loses the ball in the sun, drops the ball, and every run scores in that situation. You know, it doesn't matter for Sale's earned run average, but it ended up mattering for the game. So I'm totally with you here. I need my center fielder to be locked down with the defense. Do you think that this is truly something with, like, you know, Kike finds it more difficult to play center field, therefore he focuses on it more, therefore he loses focus at the plate? Or do you think that a lot of this difference, because it's huge, is statistical sort of noise that is kind of happening? Or has it been enough plate appearances of evidence to show you that, like, there really is something here between Kike and, you know, being such a good hitter at second base and being such a poor hitter at center field?
It feels like noise because how he's been doing at second base is far better than he has ever been at any point in his career. How he's doing in center is actually a little bit closer, but he's a little bit better than that. I mean, he's never been one to hit for a fantastic average. Like, I think he's hit 230, 240 a few seasons, but he generally gets on base and gets, you know, close to like 20 homers, a couple steals in there. I think we were excited to see how he would do with regular playing time, just in general.
Yeah. Because
that was not a role that he's had with his career. And I think overall it's been pretty good. And I think that with that being the case, you just got to look at the team as a whole, and the team is better with him in center field.
Yeah, I agree. I tend to think it's more noise too. You know, and we have to give Arroyo some credit too. He has sort of had a breakout year.
Yeah.
Offensively, 109 WRC plus this year. Not amazing, but, you know, certainly good enough for a good defensive second baseman, which is what he's been.
Yeah. He's also made some really nice plays as well with that slightly above average defense too. So I feel confident with him being there.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. Looking at the probably the safest positions in the whole lineup. I mean, shortstop and third base. We'll kind of take these together. Xander Bogaerts, outs above average, hates him. Negative 9 outs above average at shortstop. 57th out of 59 guys, a minimum of 50 attempts. But Fangraph's defense rating tells a much different story. They have him as 6.0 defense, 14th out of 28, so basically mid-pack, minimum 600 innings. My question for you, Keaton, is which one of these do your eyes tell you is true? The one that hates him or the one that has him as a mid-pack shortstop?
I mean, he's probably a mid-pack shortstop. I don't think he's that bad. I mean, I've tended to fall on him being underrated defensively at shortstop because there is a ton of really freaking good shortstops that are really flashy. I mean, that's just not how Bogaerts plays the position, but more often than not, he gets to the ball and he makes the play, right? So
yeah,
I think minus 11 outs above average is way worse than he feels.
Yeah, I don't think he is anywhere close to you know, that outs above average rating that he has. I mean, he certainly doesn't look to me like a 57th out of 59 guys at that position. I think Remy puts it really well when he watches Xander Bogaerts play, because he's commented on his defensive rating a bunch of times, and he basically just says, you know, Xander makes the plays that he should make. He doesn't make the spectacular play. He's not going to do anything like, you know, Jose Iglesias did early in his career, or Andrelton Simmons, or, you know, any of these guys that make these jaw-dropping plays, but he makes kind of all the plays you're supposed to make. So, yeah, I'm definitely with you. I think he's sort of a mid-pack guy there, but his bat carries it for me. You know, looking forward, he's going to be entering his 30s fairly soon, and the team has to make a decision. He has to make a decision because he can opt out of his current deal after 2022. I assume he'll do so. You know, if you're the Red Sox and you're looking to re-sign him, are you looking to bring him back as a shortstop, or do you think that he moves off the position?
I think it depends on who else you have. To me, he's the best option they have in the organization right now at shortstop. Like, I think Downs is the second baseman. And there's not really much behind him unless they absurdly fast track York. But I don't expect that to be the case. So if they go outside the organization and bring in somebody else, like we talked about Javi Baez at the trade deadline, yeah, that probably makes sense to move Bogarts over in that role. But I think it would take an outside signing for him to move. Otherwise, I think he's the shortstop. And maybe as they extend him, it's with the assumption that at some point he's moving off the position for somebody else. But I think at least short term, he's the guy. Because I don't think they have a better option.
Yeah, I think Xander's, 28 years old right now? So yeah. This is his age 28 season. Next year will be his age 29 season. So he can opt out basically entering his age 30 season. I'm probably comfortable re-signing him and playing him at shortstop through like age 32, 33, something like that, because he definitely takes care of his body, he stays on the field. But by that time, I think the hope would be that Marcelo Mayer is ready. The guy who they just picked, fourth overall, would be ready to take over that position at that point. And then Xander Bogaerts becomes an above-average third baseman. And by that point, Rafael Devers is, getting closer to age 30 as well. So he's probably looking more like a first baseman or a DH by that point. So I think the problem kind of solves itself if you just keep Xander on the team.
Yeah, I would agree. 4 years seems like a pretty reasonable track, too. And I think that timeline makes sense for me. With Bogaerts, I feel like age 32 is a good target for the shortstop position there as well. So I like what you laid out there. I dig it.
All right.
Big question, though. Devers playing first base for the Red Sox.
I would lean towards no, just because I think Casas is going to be really good there.
I just meant, is he still on the Red Sox at that point?
Oh, geez, I hope so. I want to pay that bat whatever it takes to be in that lineup for a very long time. So, I hope that Devers does the old third base to DH move and just mashes. Like, I hope he's just the new David Ortiz for, his whole 30s. That'd be nice.
That'd be great.
Yeah. I don't think he'll be quite that good, but, it'd be nice.
It's time for today's Lucky Land Horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Speaking of Rafael, though, outs above average hates this man more than it hates Xander Bogaerts. It has him as negative 11 outs above average, rated 61 of 61. At the position, minimum 50 attempts. He is not hated nearly as much by Fangraphs. He's rated as 2.0 DEF, 11th out of 20 guys, minimum 600 innings. My impression of his defense is much more in line with Fangraphs, that has a middle of the pack here, just like they have Xander middle of the pack. I think he's fine at third base. what have you thought of his play? I know we made a big deal about it early in the year in April when he was making a ton of errors, but he really hasn't seemed like a problem to me in a while.
No, and he's gotten significantly better. He started off horrendously, but he's just every season he seems to just not hit the ground running, which is fine. But sometimes that's just the way players work. Like John Lester was like that forever. So I think we tend to make too much of what happens in that first month because it's our first dip back into the season. But even last year and the year before when he started slow, he's turned it around and finished respectively defensively. And this year it seems like he's even taken a step forward really over the last, whatever that would be, 3 months, 4 months since the horrendous start. And there's still some moments where his footwork kind of gets over his shoes and lets the ball sail a bit, but it's a lot fewer and far in between than it was. And he has some, more often than not, he'll make a spectacular play that kind of just makes you go, wow, that guy like that should not be able to move like that. And it looks great. So I'm fine where he is, and I think I fall much more in line with you and Fangraphs in that he's probably middle of the pack. And still, I feel getting better at the position. So I think ultimately, I mean, like you just laid out, his track is either at first or DH anyway. So you probably don't have to sit on it for that much longer.
Yeah, I'm totally there. And I think his arm makes up for a lot. And I do agree with you, though, that I have noticed that the footwork is getting better. He's making, it seems, fewer throwing errors as the year goes on, which were always the errors that frustrated me because it was always like just not setting his feet or rushing the play or whatever. And I'm definitely noticing that that's been a lot better. So, yeah, I'm totally fine with him there. And, you know, he's Xander Bogaerts' shadow, and Xander knows how to take care of his body. You have to think that Rafael Devers is absorbing some of that, too. So if he can be Xander-esque at third base, that's totally cool by me.
Yeah.
Just that run-of-the-mill dude with a big, big stick.
Big stick.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's talk left field, the most hallowed position in Red Sox history. You know, Ted Williams, Carl Yastrzemski, Jim Rice, Manny Ramirez. We've had some good ones over there, and I'm definitely leaving out a few key names. But right now,
noted Red Sox great.
That's not who I was thinking of, but yes, I know you love yourself some J. Bebe. Left field for the Red Sox, though, this year has been mostly Alex Verdugo and J.D. Martinez. Verdugo defensively ranks 7th out of 25, minimum 500 innings at left field with a DEF of negative 2.8. That negative number is not nearly as bad as it sounds. Certain positions like first base and left field are considered less valuable defensively. So anything close to like neutral there is actually a pretty good mark. So that's why he's ranked all the way at 7th. JD, though, interestingly enough, he's only played 239 innings there. So, you know, you have to go down a little bit further to get an accurate reading for him. But, you know, he's been worth 1.3 DEF at the position. He's actually surprised us this year with some pretty decent outfield play. But the problem with JD is he's slashing 239, 297, 367 with just a 71 WRC plus while playing left field. Which one of these guys should be playing left field on a regular basis?
Verdugo. Martinez has looked nice. He's made some pretty nice plays, and he's even thrown some guys out as well. But I don't think that is really typical of his abilities at the position, and like you noted, it's not a very large sample size, but I think this is a case where, I mean, JD is going to be like 34 or just turned 34.
Yeah.
And
has back problems.
And has very noted back problems.
Yeah.
So yeah, that I don't think is beneficial for him at the plate. playing all those innings out in left field. He needs to DH where he's much more comfortable and much more effective. And Verdugo playing left.
Yeah, I mean, the marginal defensive upgrade from JD to Verdugo, and I'm not even sure that would play out as JD got closer to like that 500 inning mark that Verdugo has already gotten to. I think it would probably even out over that amount of time. I don't think it's worth the downgrade in the bat that we're seeing from JD when he does play the field. I totally agree with you there. I do think it is kind of interesting, though, that JD has looked so good going back on the ball. He's made a few catches, like, kind of over his head or over his shoulder this year. And when I was looking at outs above average, too, because you can go all the way down to 50 attempts there, and they kind of show the range, like whether going back on a ball, going to his left, going to his right, what he's been really good at. And JD has actually graded out above average for outfielders going back on the ball, which I find kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we've noted that the defense on this pod that has like kind of surprised us a bit, but because it's been surprising and maybe a little bit better than we remembered, doesn't eliminate the fact that he really struggles at the plate and also has issues. So it's been nice while he's been out there. It's been cool. Good for fantasy, gain that outfield eligibility. But Red Sox best lineup is with him at DH.
Yep, totally agree. All right, next position. Most important, probably, defensive position outside of catcher, I'd say. Center field, maybe even more important than catcher these days. Kike Hernandez, Alex Verdugo, and Jaron Duran have all gotten over 200 innings at that position. They've all had very different values, though. According to outs above average, Kike has been worth plus six outs above average, which is ranked sixth out of 62 in DEF as well. So, I mean, that's just a tremendous ranking there. He's actually right behind Jackie Bradley Jr., who's fifth in DEF. So, you know, he's basically giving you JBJ defense in center field. Not quite as good, but, you know, better bat. Duran has been worth zero outs above average and has been 45th out of 62 in DEF. And Verdugo, negative three outs above average at the position, 56th of 62. This one seems like a no-brainer to me. Kike in center field, we kind of talked about that before. But, I mean, looking forward, Keaton, Duran's the guy we've been talking about as the center fielder of the future. He's still learning the position. I think we can agree Verdugo in center field is ugly, so that's kind of ruled out. But yep. Kike is under contract for next year. Duran is under, you know, team control for a long time, as is Verdugo. What do you do with the position moving forward?
I think Kike probably splits time next year as Duran still learns the position. Like, I mean, Duran zero outs above average feels right. The 45th out of 62. I mean, both of them, I guess, could be small samples because it hasn't been a ton of time, but
yeah, just over 200 innings.
I don't think he's been awful at the position. Like, it's clear there are still some things for him to work on. But at other times, he takes really great routes to the ball. He plays that deep monster carom really well, gets the ball back in and holds guys to singles. So I think he's got the feel and the skills to be, you know, above average at the position. He's just maybe not quite there yet, which is understandable for him. So I still feel fine with him long term, unless, you know, we get an extended period here where he doesn't look all that great, which probably means that he'll split time with Kike next year, and Kike will still be getting everyday at bats at like second base or center field, kind of similar to what's been going on this year. But long term, I still feel fine with Duran at the position.
I've kind of gone back on this one. I almost feel like I like Duran more as off-season trade bait now that his value has gone up so much that I kind of want just give it to Kike in center field next year. And I kind of feel like also it's pretty inexpensive to find elite center fielders. We saw what Jackie Bradley Jr. went for, you know, Kike, what he went for. I don't want to give up on Jaron Duran, but I think that guys who have trouble with those initial reads don't always fix that issue. You know, it's not a matter of athleticism with Jaron Duran. I'm not sure he's ever going to be above average at making those initial reads off of the ball. And if, you know, Jaron Duran could be a centerpiece to return you a really good starting pitcher, maybe that's the way to go. I don't know. Am I crazy for thinking that?
Yes.
Why?
You're already trading him?
I don't know. I mean, like, if you tell me that his value is high enough that we can get something like a really good team-controlled pitcher, like, I'm thinking about it, man.
You haven't even seen him play. You just got a little taste. You got to let him adjust.
Okay. So if someone calls you up and they're like, hey, Keaton, we'll give you Herman Marquez for Jaron Duran. What do you say?
Well, you're not getting team control out of Herman Marquez, so no.
But he's cheap.
Is he?
He's pretty cheap. Yeah, he's signed for like a multi-year deal pretty cheap.
Oh, I thought he was a free agent like after next season.
No, I'm pretty sure he has like three more seasons after this one.
Oh. Well, then maybe...
That's the type of thing that I'm thinking about, though, you know? It's starts to get interesting when you get floated an arm. I'm just not sure he gets there, but you sound a lot more confident than I am about Duran getting better at making those reads.
You're right. Marquez does have three more years, but he gets continually more expensive every year. Yeah, I mean... Like, he's figured it out at every level. He's needed time to adjust. Like, he had a really bad first month at AA, right? And then was on absolute fire over this more than the second half. Same thing, AAA. Didn't get off to the hottest start, but started figuring it out eventually by the time he got called up. We've also seen, like, talking to scouts that this year, because of the lost season of development in actual like, competitive baseball, like, the alternate site was good to an extent, but they weren't actually playing competitive games every day like they would normally have. And that's made the jump from AAA to the majors a much more significant gap than it usually is. I mean, it's a large gap anyway, but it's been steeper. And right. We've seen a ton of prospects struggle, even as high as Jared Kelnick, who is like number one, number two prospect. Well, not Franco's number one, so like two, three prospects.
In the discussion, though.
Yeah. And so I think you just need to give him the time to adjust, and then he'll be an above average major leaguer. I still believe in that. Nothing that I've seen from this season and taking in the facts around where he's at in his age and development makes me feel significantly different than I did 6 months ago.
Okay. Well, let's move on to right field. You know, outside of maybe third and short, this seems like a pretty solid position. Hunter Renfro has taken this job and really ran with it, and offensively, defensively, everything has looked great from Hunter Renfro. I've really enjoyed the Hunter Renfro experience. He has ranked 11th out of 18 in DEF per 600 innings minimum, and 20th out of 40 in outs above average. He's been worth zero outs above average, so basically mid-pack there, minimum 50 attempts. This one, I totally don't agree with the metrics on. You know, watching him all year, almost every single game, you know, I tune into at least part of every game. I try to. Dude has a cannon arm, takes good routes, doesn't get tricked. I cannot quite figure out why he's grading out so low. Do you have any ideas as to why that might be?
I do.
Okay.
Because right field at Fenway plays like a center field.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he gets dinged in his route running, because there's a lot of things that go to right that he doesn't get to. But that's not his fault. That's purely the dimensions of right field. There's a lot of people that don't get to a lot of things out there in right field. It really just kind of emphasizes how freaking good Mookie Betts was at playing right field in Fenway Park.
Well, that's the thing. I was always thinking that Fenway was overrating Mookie Betts in right field, but was it actually underrating Mookie Betts in right field?
It very well may could have. Like, which is kind of wild to think, but yeah. It's very possible. I think that's the only thing I can think of, because he doesn't take awful routes. He gets the balls. He makes plays. The cannon, I mean, he's... At one point, he was leading the major leagues in outfield assists. I don't know if he still is or not.
I think he still is.
Yeah. I mean, he's... Overall, to me, he's played an above-average right field, and that's just because it's so absurdly difficult to play that position in Fenway Park, and he's done very well at it.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that he is Jackie Bradley Jr. or anything like that. Obviously, different positions, but he has that type of quality where as soon as the ball is hit, you know, his initial read is almost always correct, it seems. He's almost never fooled.
Yeah. I mean, he has 85% success rate in right field, which seems pretty good. It's actually slightly above where he has been in his career at right field, playing with San Diego and Tampa. So this would actually seem to suggest he's playing a slightly better right field in Fenway Park than he has in other places. And maybe that's just because, you know, there's more focus at the difficult position. But I feel like the metrics are digging him just because of the dimensions of how it plays. Because the eye test, he's perfectly fine.
Yeah, another thing that I'm kind of curious about, too, is the fact that he has been playing right field alongside kind of a revolving door at center field. You know, we've mentioned all the different guys who played there, Verdugo and Duran. Kike has obviously played amazing when he's been there, but... You know, I wonder how much he's had to cover for guys like Verdugo and Duran when he is playing that position.
Yeah, I mean, that could play into it too.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Going forward, though, I mean, this is a guy, Hunter Renfroe, that has some team control. He's got arbitration years left. Are you fully confident giving him right field moving forward for the Red Sox for, say, I don't know, the next couple of years at least?
Yeah.
Me too. I like him. I like him a lot.
And he's having the best offensive year of his career, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, he seems to really like being a member of this team. So it seems to be a good fit all around. Hunter Renfroe with the Red Sox. So if we look at it as a team, though, the overall Red Sox as a team rank exactly mid-pack in DEF per Fangraphs, 15th out of 30. But Outs Above Average has them as the worst defensive team in baseball. 30th out of 30, negative 33 Outs Above Average as a team. Which of these do you believe, Keaton?
Yeah, I think I believe the middle of the pack, because I think it kind of goes back to what I mentioned at the beginning. All of the mental mistakes that they're making make it seem worse, but like them getting thrown out at home plate by 30 feet or forgetting how many outs there are don't actually count towards their defense. It's just a compiles that with four errors in the game, and you're like, these guys are a bunch of idiots. There's no way they're a good baseball team. But then you look at the stats... Like, we just went position by position, and the middle of the pack feels like it's more correct. Should be a lot better, but isn't.
Yeah, I'm willing to maybe push them down to, like, 20th of 30. But 30 of 30 seems bananas to me, especially with some of the performances that we've noted from Kike and Renfroe and the solid defense at short and third and, you know, not a complete drop-off, and at catcher, definitely worse, but not a complete drop-off. Arroyo's been fine. Yeah, they definitely play more mid-pack to me. Maybe it's back of the mid-pack, but it's definitely not 30 out of 30. But let's talk about a beautiful scenario where the Red Sox have everybody back from COVID. Obviously, they can't make any major additions. They've been hunting that waiver wire, though. What is your optimal lineup for the Red Sox when everybody's healthy? Let's start at catcher. Vasquez. Okay, me too. Who are you playing at first?
Schwarber.
Me too. Who are you playing at second?
Arroyo.
Me too. Who are you playing at short?
Bogarts.
Third?
Devers.
Okay, me too, me too. Left field?
Verdugo.
Same. Center field?
Kike.
And right field?
Renfro.
That's your optimal Red Sox lineup. Who's your DH?
J.D. Martinez.
Same. So that would leave us with a bench of Dalbec, Plawecki, probably Danny Santana and Jonathan Arias, or if you wanted to option Arias,
I would say the first two that you said, plus Duran and Shaw.
Duran and Shaw. Okay. So no Iglesias on that team.
No.
I need a backup middle infielder, so I would keep Arias or Iglesias.
Or Kike.
Yeah.
I don't know. Can play short.
But we do agree on that optimal lineup, and you know how many times we've seen that lineup this year?
None.
Once.
Wow, really? We saw Schwarber at first and Arroyo at second in the same game?
Once.
Wow, I didn't think they overlapped.
Yep. Barely.
Well, cool. You know, we're only like 140 games into this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. So, I mean, it's getting more realistic, though, because now we have Verdugo back, or we have Verdugo. He never left. Kike's back. Renfro's back. Devers is there because he's never left. Xander should be back this week. Arroyo should be back soon. Schwarber is at first now. This lineup looks possible. This could be your lineup in the playoffs. And if it is, that's definitely a mid-pack defensive team, if not better.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Interesting stuff, for sure. All right, let's get to our listener questions. Dynasty One Stop, the commissioner of one of our fantasy leagues, thank you for this question. He says, why is Kyle Schwarber the greatest? And will the Red Sox extend / re-sign him? And he gave us a nice Schwarber gif. What do you think? Will they re-sign him or extend him?
I would love for them to, but I wonder if the free agent market prices him out of it, because he's going to be a hot one. There's no way that he is mutually agreeing to $10 million because the open market is going to give him a lot more than that. So they're going to have to bid for him. I would love to see it happen, but I just don't know if it will.
Yeah, I want to see it happen really bad. Just because I think his bat is pretty much perfect. I kind of think it depends on whether or not J.D. Martinez decides to opt out of the last year of his deal. Man, I'm tempted to just pay him, even though J.D. might not opt out of that deal, just because I like the bat and the fit so much, and he clearly has been a fit for the clubhouse and been a leader and sort of a stabilizing presence there as well. I'm truly 50-50 on this one. I think they should re-sign him.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. 50-50, and I think and hope that they do.
Yeah, definitely. Even though it's not like the best fit, you know.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, though, if J.D. opts out, then I think he makes too much sense.
Yeah, if J.D. opts out, I jump up to like 85%.
Yep.
Our next question comes from Zach Zoidberger. And he says, what player do you think steps up the most down the stretch here to get us into the playoffs?
Xander Bogarts. I think he's been playing hurt, which is why we've seen the dip of him at the plate. I think this 10 days or however many days it is away as a blessing in disguise for him to get healthy and rest. We've seen him try and play through injuries before, and it doesn't go great. And I think when he comes back, he's going to be pretty damn annoyed. And he's going to put the team on his back and get him over the finish line into the playoffs.
All right. I love that. I love motivated and pissed off Xander Bogaerts, who was forced to actually take some time off to get healthy. So you're right. Maybe this is a little bit of a blessing in disguise for him. I'm going to go with a guy who you definitely do not expect me to go with. Somebody who I have dogged time and time again in the past. Eduardo Rodriguez. I'm going to say that Eddie puts up a stretch that gets the man a payday and is just lights out down the stretch to propel the Red Sox into a playoff position.
Well, it's not off to a great start.
Well, thanks, Keaton.
Yeah, spoiler alert. I assume you don't have the game in front of you.
No, I don't.
Yeah. 3 2/3 tagged for 6.
He's starting the run right after this one. All right, that's why I dog him all the time. Yep. Shame on me. Justin Wolf has our next question. Actually, we kind of answered it. That was the one that I read earlier about what the lineup should be going forward. But Verdugo is definitely not a fourth outfielder. Schwarber in left is ugly. Verdugo is a much better left fielder. Bobby's probably the bench guy, man. I think we agree there. Next question was really interesting, though. Claiborne Snowden says, Tyler Motter will likely soon enter into obscure Red Sox. Who are your favorite obscure former Red Sox over the past 10 years? And Motter already has entered into the obscurity. He was just DFA'd. But this was a cool question. So I went and I looked back and I kind of, sorted through the last 10 years and guys who have played games for this team. First one that came to mind for me was Steve Pierce. Only played 79 games for this team, but man, was that a memorable 79 games.
That is interesting. See, the three that I had thought of were all prior to 2010. Jason Bay was actually one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Junichi Tozawa and Curtis Laskanik.
Oh, Laskanik, yeah. That's a good one.
How about Rosny Castillo?
Yeah, but like he did nothing. You know?
He had his debut, he hit like 5 homers, hit .275 over like 20 games.
Yeah.
Gave some people a lot of hope.
What about
Daniel Nava?
You're going way back, man. You're going too
That's
far
2014.
Back.
2014. That's 6 years.
Is it?
Yes. Or 7 years. Sorry, I forgot. It's 2021.
Feels like Nava was forever ago.
It does. But, I mean, hard to beat Grand Slam on your first pitch.
Yeah, I mean, Nava's great. It's a great story.
Yoenis Cespedes.
No. No. He was bad for us. 95 WRC plus. What about like Alejandro De Aza? He was hot. He was hot for a little bit. 122 WRC plus, 292 for the team.
Sure. I'll give it to you.
You know who I thought of immediately though? And I couldn't go with him because he played too many games. He played 174 games for this team, which is just ahead of Michael Chavis over the last 10 years. But Mike Aviles, I always liked.
Oh, yeah, that is a good one.
You know, like, he wasn't very good. He had an 80 WRC+. But I just liked Mike Aviles. Not sure why.
Drew Pomeranz.
That's a good one.
Or, yeah, Melanson was in the past 10 years, right? He was super bad and then became the best reliever in baseball as soon as he left.
Yep.
That's a fun one.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's a fun question. I could look at those types of things for a long time. And I will probably end up down a wormhole thanks to that question there. Our next one comes from CH. Are the Red Sox going to make the postseason? Yay or nay?
God, I shouldn't be confident, but... Well, I guess I don't know if it's confident. I feel like 51% chance, so I'm going to go yes.
I don't know why I continue to be optimistic about this team. They've given me literally no reason to be, but yes, I will stupidly say yes and be wrong. So yes, they will make the playoffs. Yep. Let's be stupid together, Keaton.
All right. Loves company.
Yeah, there we go. Well, that has been our show today. We hope you enjoyed this last hour of Red Sox talk. If you did, tune in, subscribe to our show if you haven't already. Tell all your friends and your enemies about this show and how great it is. And check out the other shows on the network. You can find the Over the Monster podcast with Brian and Matt. You can find the Red Sox on Deck podcast with Bob and Shelley. And, of course, you can find Keaton's other podcast on this network, the Precap podcast, also with Shelley. Thanks for joining us. Keaton, thank you. And we will be with you again next week. Go Sox.